bungled hippie get a job. You might not realise your predictability, but when you caught my eye on Shop Street at the demo, I could see the thoughtless words forming in your brain. So before you shout them at me, pass remarkably, let me just stop you there this once, and before you put those words into the air between us, let me tell you something. Because I have wrestled with a pitchfork the same size I was, and shoveled unknown tons of horse manure from sheds on school mornings before your mother brought you breakfast, toast and tea. And when you daydreamed out the window of maths class from an overheated room into the driving rain, I was carrying sodden bales of hay through the mud and bitter wind to the bottom fields where the old cow died in the spring. And because I had small hands, I woke 100 early mornings to turn unborn lambs around inside their mothers, while you were filling CAO forms, and when you were accepted, bringing weekend washing home and student discount buses, I was pitting my 8 stones, like that was then, against half a ton of pulling racehorse and couldn't feel my fingers or open my eyes with the driving wind. And you then qualified an interview in your shirt and tie and nerves, while I was taking sweating tourists on foot through humid rainforest, carrying Longhouse Chief's heavy gifts of pineapples for 9 hours back to base in a country you don't have the breadth of mind to even imagine. And nearer home, when you guffawed into your pint glass and refused to leave Taylor's Bar on Sunday early closings, I washed your glass and swept the floor, then walked before the county to spend frozen hours putting rubber bands on live lobster claws in a concrete tank in Barna. And then I bet you were promoted for your clever corporate antics while I did 3 years mortgage paying on the night shift with daytime TV addicts and stoners manufacturing things you might one day have inserted after one too many business lunches. And later on, when I decided I needed education, and you sat with popcorn, consuming the latest Hollywood blockbuster, you couldn't see me upstairs splicing your next bit of entertainment, and you've no idea how long a day is, invigilating young accountants and tedium in silence in dusty exam halls with the smell of fast food fat still clinging to your clothes from your nighttime cash and hand gig. You won't realise that I have the streets of Galway imprinted on my brain from delivering goat cheese and pesto pizza to your nuts and carrots so far, or that I'm an expert on late night radio and all night petrol stations, where we have the secondary benefits of my own free education. And now, and here, when I finally got myself some work, I think as married, and I choose to use this day off working to defend the rights of others, don't be surprised at all how quickly I abandoned my principles of non-violence and use this placard on you as a weapon if you say what you're thinking. Okay, I decided I was going to be one mean one and one nice one, so I need a book for the next one. Nope, mean. Okay, this is a poem that I think is in a response. Someone read a poem about wanting man's poems earlier, and I do a bit of gender bending here because I think this is a man's poem. A poem called My Kind of Men. I grew up with them. Not your office shirt of gelled hair, aftershave type. Fishermen with thick hair full of salt. Dealing men, living on the ritz and getting pretty thin. Men with coats no bank has ever heard of for behaviour, and weird ethics no judge could hope to understand. They had phrases, humpy cow, humpy calf, right girl wanted, or a minute's thinking is worth an hour of running. But damn me if there's not as big a fool as me here somewhere, only to find them. They had ropes, jump leads and old long-used wrenches, sockets and empty cigarette packets on dashboards. They made sounds of fraternity. Sure, a shout is a great man when you're lifted. They made shared wordless noises that could collaborate and join them. These guys could spot each other at the counter, in the takeaway, or on the ferry to La Harve in butchered accents. They had driven loads of oranges from Spain to the communist bloc and applied their dealer's eye to everything they saw there. They pulled drowning people out of caves, shot dogs, could wanted it, tolerated nothing in others, and made sounds approaching conversation. Somewhere here I have set list, but I can't read it. Just a poem. Today Amnesty did release research on child abuse in Ireland, which is a very bizarre thing, and this is, I think, nearly everybody now has a child abuse poem at this stage. This is mine. It's not funny. I don't like how people write off victims, and this is a poem about that. It's a poem called Resilience. So I sat on the knees of Redemptorists and Jesuits, served a few Sundays at Mass, hung around bishops' palaces. No priest ever asked me. And in truth, if they had, I would have probably assented like I did for the collarless, all gathered now baying for this new reformation. But it takes a village to rape a child. And at 11, when I heard of the mission, my first thought was to join them. But later it dawned, but that too is rape. There is no escaping. And to date, we've built no system that isn't. At the Truth and Reconciliation, the man who'd lost his own Mercedes to the conflict seemed more damaged than a boy of 12 who dismembered his own mother at gunpoint. But who is it anyway that gets to say if it's a crime to be resilient under trees grown tall with bloodshed? And I could tell you the bullet-ridden iconic location that happened at. Could go into how that country's people ripped one another to shreds in a conflict as reason as rhymeless as any. But all I'd say is, that day in hot sunshine, an old man, his skin brown from exposure, swam by a bridge in a fast-flowing river, and you can decide if it was Belfast, Bamiyan, Afghanistan, Iraq, the Christian Brothers in Letterfrack, Mostar, Libya, no matter. All I'm saying is, people swim after.
And while we're on, Graham,
Paul was, I'm just back from Mexico, and I've been there a couple of times, and Mexico is a state in complete and utter crisis at the moment, but Paul was asking me how I got on, so here's a bit of how I got on. Paul called In Anger, Hope, and Undefeatable Love, and it's for a friend of mine, Betty Carino, who was murdered by paramilitaries there a year and a half ago. Cowards, same story, hope defeats you, plaguers, stealing scripts you didn't write, you're just parents, but deadly. See hope, and you kill it with whatever's to hand, and you find what you murdered was only one strand of our many-headed parade of laughing dreamers and seekers, people who show their faces, disregarding baseless illusions, separating classes and races. We dream of better and give you night sweats, cowards. With threats of no more than a good example, bare-armed cheap workers, land guardians, peasant farmers, and the very idea of a world where we are their keepers, brothers are lovers, and they are ours. Scares you, cowards. You'll choke on that fear of songs, of embraces, of clearly shown faces. Kill us. Would that you wouldn't. Would that you'd join us instead. Still, we'll bury our dead and return to face you with hope and imagination again and again and again. And before anyone goes off and talks to themselves, this might be done to lighten up a bit. It's a poem about a holiday in Malta, which is gruesome for other reasons, but only in its utter banality. And it's a poem called Convention. And I started now when I remember the first line. The guy in the corner enthuses that the chief source of contamination in any kitchen is from the bin to the counter and vice versa. And he's grimacing knowingly at the waiter's slim hands as they deliver one more bottle of cheap tranquilizer. An old doll sitting next to him isn't listening. She's busy explaining that though she isn't religious, she is nonetheless a very spiritual person. There are a few more laggards scattered at cheap plastic tables, all very cold looking in the pink speeches and hair bleaches they're doggedly wearing, appropriate by some reckoning for just such vacations. There's a wind kicking up big time against thin plastic walls not made for this weather, and the waves crashing below in their storm force are refusing to have anything to do with our cluster of hot air and bluster in a cafe bar where everything comes with chips and is accompanied by hits even Elvis wouldn't be seen dead listening to. An old queen in the corner winks at me. It says, hey there, sister. That one's universal. Slim pickings, as Wink says, and I'd have to agree, though I'm not really shopping. But my newfound companion across the table is decrying the state of the current market for lights. He's bemoaning Chinese resurgence in manufacturing, saying they wouldn't know light if it hit them in the face. And I think that the boats below in the harbour are sparking like 100 Chinese lanterns, but I don't mention it, I just watch them. While another would-be, what he is explaining, that the guy who thought up post-its is now worth a fortune, but good fortune like that doesn't strike every day. You've got to be open, or so he tells the Ukrainian who can't follow a word. And he's had some successes, he said, but it's best not to go into them, not to blow his own trumpet. And now the queen from the corner takes my elbow and whispers, you know, from the back of my eye on you, but the buttocks were a bit fleshy, more the pity. And if I could name my one fantasy, it'd be Michelangelo or David. But he's such a cold bastard. Come on, sweetheart, we're leaving. Thank God for deviance and the minibar in my room, and I'm with him to the night, to the seafront, arms linking, and we're drinking, neither of us giving two fucks for convention. Dying of boredom yet? Will I stop or keep going? Okay, well, do you get your money there? The poem called Things You Put on the Net. I'm a disaster in relationships, and it's the most useful thing you could be if you want to be a poet, because it gives you unlimited material. I come up with new ways to fuck them up once a week. So there's another poem about that called Things You Put on the Net. Sleepless at 4 a.m. and feeling raw as chewed skin on the edge of a fingernail. I was flicking through junk mail that advised extending my credit and penis, shrinking my waistline. Our trusted friend, I've inherited money and I heard you could help. When I found 10-year-old messages from you, telling me you felt weightless by the Berlin Wall, your antipodean airiness perplexing both Germanys, saying you knew that you missed me, but wasn't it funny how we were better apart than squeezing these egos together? Misquoting, you wrote, Mario Benedetti said the miracle was that a swim in this vast sea of people us two met. And we did, but that wasn't Benedetti, and I know, yeah, you hate to be wrong, but you'd signed all the mails with soul sunshine and the kind of hope that makes your eyes water. And I thought how harshly I'd rewritten you, how in hindsight scars are just so much callous skin. And 10 years late, I wrote you a mail to say I also remember how you cursed me for my stubborn work ethic from the shipwreck of our bed. But you still send me off every morning with kisses fit for a sailor at the end of shore leave. How breakfast and lunch were a riot of pots. And really, you were never that tidy, but I'm no longer sure if it matters. And I accept there's a slim to none chance that you'll get it. I accept that there's a torrent gone under this bridge. But you know, anything put in the internet floats out there forever. Okay, I've definitely lost it. I had a poem I wanted to read it, so I do a different one I know off instead. It's a poem about getting your heart broken, something I'm also similarly expert on. Tuesdays and Thursdays only, and a poem called Riot Act. You took the last strip of evening and turned it sinister, unattractive. You turned it quicksilver and left it pulsing like a blister on a mercurial city of murdered graffiti boys scrawled and well deflected, like the light you refracted 10 minutes before when you matter-of-facted all bets off, promises retracted. You took our history and ransacked it, took the future and attacked it over margaritas neither could pay for a swallow. You left me space cadetted lump in the throat as I walked it out past the town park with dogs on the street barking it. Past shops night break had got stupid, censored, redacted. You left me with my fucking heart looted until I overreacted. About writing the poem, which is I have a poem actually that I want to read for Deirdre O'Shaughnessy because she hates Ponty poetry, because it's a poem called Ology, and it's basically my approach. I'll never write a Greek myth poem. Wings of gods will never melt in here, and all you wannabe Achilles can take your vulnerable heels to other pages. Neither goddesses nor big haired Medusas will get their diva away with me. I don't find that posturing amusing. And Zeus too can go elsewhere with all his ology. Gods, unless I meet you in the takeaway or petrol station, be gone, the lot of you, you won't be featured. And it's a poem called Poem. Well, it's actually called Just a Sit Think, but anyway, we call it Poem for the moment, and it's another poem about writing poems. During a week of nights like centuries, when light from disemboweled days kept 4 a.m. with me on the hover, seeking out some sort of order, we had the fortune to encounter a no perfect string of words made to measure for our universe of sleepless hours. daddy long-legged, no less, they landed on my eyelids in the spare room, darting with the bleakness that caught me in the throat, then arced away towards poignancy like someone beating brass to gold. They soared then to a stereo surround sound filled spectre like crescendo. Honestly, one word followed another like fluff ducklings diagonally slotted behind their mother, seeming to have always been together, and me, the bag-eyed recipient of this hand-delivered poem tapestry of insomnia, knew before I finally drifted under that it would be the one against which I'd measure every other. The day after, dealing with the usual strain of maintaining equilibrium on only 3 hours, well, fuck me, but not one word that I remember. And I have, bizarrely enough, every time I read somewhere, except for Paul, most people describe me as a poet and an activist, and I'm the biggest chicken that ever walked on the planet, so there's a poem about that. I think it's just because I have a big mouth. So it's a poem called Coward's Lament. It gives me no great pleasure to admit that if I was tortured, it's likely that I'd come straight out with whatever tidbit they were after. Sorry, comrades, I'm afraid I always was a talker. And though never one for manicures, I'm nonetheless fond of my fingernails, but would get totally emotional at even one flourish of the pliers. I was only ever tear-gassed once, and Jesus, was I scared. But I didn't let the sight down much, I'm telling you, tears were everywhere, and I hoarded secret admiration for the head-banded youngster who caught the canister one-handed and tossed it back, then showboating bowed to the assembled. But I could never mimic that stuff, though accepted scripts of self-delusion where I always get the Joan of Arc part. Any time I felt the baton's belt firsthand, seriously, it wasn't very pleasant. And truth be known, I scarpered so sharply, some might say I fled. And sure, who am I to contradict them, not being much for argument myself? You see, in theory, I'm in favour of resistance, but in practice, I find it really, really hurts. Another insomnia poem. I actually sleep pretty well, so I don't know why I have insomnia poems, but anyway, we go for it. And this is called 3 a.m. Guest List. I suppose it is that time of night to welcome in all your dead and abandoned. Please take a seat in the bed. Welcome to Exodus. Funny, I've been expecting you to call dead dogs and midge bitten sunburned lost days in the bog. This was not exclusive. Why don't you just make yourself at home in the back kitchen? I'll be with you in an instant. Uncompleted tasks, yes, we've been introduced. Step over this way with all of the things I said I'd do, then didn't. Oh shit, they're hearing their numbers. Well, you'll find the bathroom is empty. Could you all just maybe perch on the edge of the bath? Unpaid bills, not you too? Okay then, so be it. You might find at least that you've much to discuss with my dead auntie here on the sofa. She works in citizens information, and she'll make short work of you, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, country music, I do hear you knocking. And I know there's no hope of you missing a gig like this. But no torch songs, there's no need for you to perform, and the porch light's left on for just such an eventuality. Be best if you just sit on the floor here with these legions of melancholy. I don't know them that well, but they seem to fit in. And truth, well, would you look at what the cat dragged in? It's typical, isn't it? True to form, as it were. You're the last to arrive, and what's more, in the morning you'll be first out the door, and all those delusions and deceptions that were hanging out here in daylight, we refuse to acknowledge that you even exist. Oh Christ, don't tell me it's the door down. Jesus, we're a reality citizen from the guest list. Give me 2 seconds, I have a poem here somewhere I want to read because it's the first time, but I can't find it and I have it in my hand, so. And I don't know it. Okay, now we're going to wreck your heads with this one. I have read this before and it's a little bit mad. It's an overreaction to someone. People often want to put you in boxes. So I may be about to fall dismally at the last hurdle on this one, but off we go. It's called Sad Bear's Dance. In the middle of a critique of post-feminist lit, the academical asked for examples. She cased the joint for samples. You there in the corner, how do you identify? And like I do when I'm put in the spot, I back answered, retorted, shut up, go sweetheart, that one's the keeper and I really like the cut of your jib. She insisted that I was manifesting a notably insidious strain of patriarchy and said, sisters and the few selected men amongst us, can you see how our specimen is acting unwittingly contrary to feminist interests? Seems she's internal and, oh yes, she's aping it, picking fleas from my pelt. I said, well, in the interest of political correctness, are we talking here gender or sex? And she, whichever, I'm asking, are you an X or a Y? And if you're happy with that designation, or do you feel you've been put in a box? Never till now I was thinking, but she just wouldn't be stopped. I'm asking, did you learn it or just be it? Chromosomally speaking, science we're talking, not myth. And I said, oh, science is it. Why didn't you say? Well, you'll be happy to know I'm empirical, a walking experiment, and I propose that there are way more letters than that. I'm a boy, if you want, a man for all seasons, and when the moon falls, I'm her bitch. I'm a wave that never comes far enough in, an 8-year-old child in a dress. In my father's high heels, call me princess. And while we're at it, get down on your knees for your king. Sure, if we're talking here subject and object, then I'm the red boy you've always wanted to bugger. I'm a work in progress. I might never be finished. A construction, fallen foul of the bust. I'm rubble, fictitious, making it up as I go. Now gender all those, if you wish. I'm a name on your label. Mammal, amphibian, fish out of water. I'm a sexless, conquestless, Casanova, an afterthought study to within an inch of my life. A petri dish, a seahorse. I'm ambidextrous, all at once, left, centre and right. Sure, fuck it. Why stop there while we're at it? Let's abstract it. I'm an insomniac owl at your window, banging the pig with my beak. I'm a wheatfield. Well, sometimes I am it. Sometimes I'm in it. Sometimes, perversely, I'm sand. But today, I'm a cowgirl in leather, and I'm cracking the script for the kicks tomorrow. I could have my legs crossed, perfume reeking from each of my wrists. So come on in with your corkboard and microscope. Sure, I'll prostrate myself for your pin. Why wouldn't I when I'm my own favourite blank canvas and artwork unfinished? And I'm terribly glad of your interest. Hey, listen, I know, Eureka. We could begin our own travelling freak show and go out on the road if you want. We'll meander through small towns and villages, and when the crowds gather, I'll get my kit off and strip to entice them while you pocket our ill-gotten loot. And after, when it's quiet and they've gone, I'll slow dance on your chain like the saddest of bears until Sunday, when I'll about-face and savage you. In that way, no one ever predicts, no matter how often this rictus of captive and victors enacted, and I'll be happy at it, let me tell you, happy as a striped jacket. Jacketed monkey transplanted to the coldest of streets, because of my own trick pony reading up on peripheral vision, realizing I have it and asserting that I can grind any organ I wish, and I trust the hands of it.
Here it was Sarah Clancy.